Chris Johnson wait on the line during that. How you feel about country music, CJ?
I can tell you when I was in Nashville in the Cup Final, I liked it just fine.
Yeah, Tootsie's plays some pretty good country there, CJ. Yeah. I know that.
Okay.
It gets in your blood when you're there. It just feels right.
Yeah. Did you buy a hat? Did you just go full poser? That's what I would do in those moments. It's like if you go to a football game at an opposing team stadium, you're like, yeah, just buy a jersey, put on the hat. Who cares? Just have a good time.
I didn't, but, you know, I was getting into it even though I didn't grow up with country music. I don't know anything about it, but I liked it when I was in that environment.
Hey, so you are at Leafs tonight. You're not at the Board of Governors meetings, but I did want to just ask you one quick question about Seattle, which is, I guess it seems like this is going to happen, that Seattle is going to end up with an NHL team. If you were a betting man and you had to pick whether this is going to be an expansion team in Seattle or someone relocates to that city, which would you choose?
I would say very likely to be an expansion team just because there's a lot of interested parties in owning the team there. And I think that they can get the expansion fee, which, you know, I've heard reports now that it could be $600 or $700 million for the next team, even though Vegas was $500 million when Bill Foley bought them. And it just seems natural to me when you have some billionaires wanting to get on owning this team and now that there's going to be an arena there that it'll be expansion. And, you know, probably the bigger question is when, because they've talked about having that building done for October 2020. But unfortunately, that right now is the time when the next lockout is likely to be happening in the league. So unless something gets done between the league and the players ahead of time, I would guess that we won't see a team in Seattle till 2021.
Yeah, relocation or getting $30 million per team. I'm always going to go with the getting $30 million in our bank accounts as opposed to the relocation. What else? What other big stories do you expect to come out, if anything, out of the Board of Governors?
Well, that'll certainly be the biggest talking point. I mean, usually at this meeting we get an update on the salary cap projection for next year, and it sounds like it's going to come in somewhere around $80 million, just based on what's still now a fairly preliminary projection. But that's a good news for teams that have to sign players or looking to extend some of their own guys that you know, we're going to see a bit more of a bump most likely for next year in that regard. And, you know, beyond that, I don't think there'll be anything too hot and buttony, but, you know, an issue I know that is kind of bubbling at the league is the idea of getting some player tracking into arenas and to, you know, really move the league forward from where they are right now in that regard. And you know, a couple of years ago at the All-Star Game in Columbus, they experimented with some chip technology, but now the focus, it sounds like, is on some camera technology that started where basically cameras will be mounted in the roof of all 31 buildings and will track the game and, you know, give teams a better idea of what's happening on the ice, give them a lot more access to being able to use the numbers that data produces and analyzing their players and those around the league. And I think it'll be better for the fans too and broadcast partners to have, you know, basically to catch up with where the NBA and other leagues have already been for a number of years now.
Yeah. CJ, every time I hear that word and that phrase, caps going up and now it's at $80 million, I love Bob Goodenow. He did so many good things for so many years, but I just get mad at that lockout because that was the sticking point that we will never take a cap. And I got to say, most of us at the time thought we need a cap. We just hear that number go up and up. I just know former players are just cursing his name right now that it's going to be at $80 million.
How much money did you lose in that last season?
$2 million, but who's counting? You know what? It only would have been $1 million because my ex-wife would have taken half of it. So I guess only $1 million.
Yeah.
Well, and the government would have taken the other half. So you're down to $500,000.
Yeah. No, you're right.
That's still a lot of appearances on the Good Show with JD.
That's a lot of appearances. Yes. Yeah.
That's true. By the way, did you like that attempt at circumvention to try to beat you to headlines this week that Barnaby just threw at you? It was like, so what other stories you got working on? What's the inside scoop on things? By the way, the headlines was good this week, and I do want to head on a couple of things that you guys had in there. But first, I want to get to some Leafs sticking points, and the first one being William Nylander. He's been, I was going to say at the center of attention, but I don't want to do the pun. But that's really what it's been, is that he has been the focus all week. And if he's going to play center, is Bozak going to play? It feels like Bozak's going to be in the lineup tonight and that he'll be back with the fourth line. Is this correct?
That's right, yep.
So if that's the case, though, I feel like there was some positive move forward for Nylander and his future at center based on some of the things that Babcock said about maybe continuing to work him in that spot in practice.
Well, yeah. I mean, look, this is going to happen at some point. It's funny. It's become one of these Toronto storylines where if there's even a whiff of him at center, it becomes 3 days of talking point and debate and conjecture. I mean, the reality is for the Leafs at this moment in time, when Tyler Bozak's playing, they have three pretty legitimate NHL centers with Nazem Kadri and Austin Matthews ahead of Bozak. And, you know, I think we can all look forward beyond this year when there's a good possibility Tyler Bozak isn't back with the Leafs. You know, he's playing out a UFA year. There's some debate even with that cap going up about whether, you know, what he hopes to get on his next contract and what the Leafs can afford at this point in time will line up and if he'll be back in Toronto. And I think at that point, you know, William Nylander would be a natural solution for this team. I mean, the role of a center in the league, I think, has evolved a little bit. I mean, certainly we see a lot of wingers now taking draws on their strong side, and William Nylander's among them. He's winning more than 54% of his faceoffs right now this year in the NHL, which is a good sign because that's obviously one of the things that would be counted upon for him. And really where the coaching staff wants to see some development is just a bit more commitment in the defensive zone, some understanding that he won't be cheating for offense, you know, which he can do a little bit more, I think, as a winger. But, you know, to me, it will be a natural progression for William Nylander. He's a smart player, and he's been a center at other levels of pretty high levels of hockey in the past, including in the Swedish Elite League, playing against men when he was still a teenager. And you know, it's going to come in time. I just don't think it'll be anytime soon unless it's you know, forced by an injury to Bozak or someone else.
Yeah, you would think that you'd want to see it earlier than later. The later you get into the season, the harder it is to try him out there. And unless there is an injury, and usually there are.
I was going to say, it would mean something bad is probably happening.
Yeah, exactly. But it at home, you'd think, would be the logical fit at some point. And it looked like it was going to be if Bozak couldn't play. But you would think at being at home, at least it would give you that option to match him against other teams' third and fourth lines, so he wouldn't, you know, be looking at the top six of another team to really expose him.
Exactly. You could control sort of the environment a little bit more than in the road games. And I think, you know, what's interesting probably about Nylander in general is that, you know, he's spent some time in the doghouse this year. I mean, there's no way around that. I mean, even as playing as a winger, you know, I think that there's been some concerning times for the coaching staff that they're not sure, you know, they don't see enough commitment out of him in terms of his effort level, you know, how into the games he is. And you know, that's why in some ways he's found his way down to the fourth line. I mean, part of it as well is that they just have a lot of forwards, and somebody's got to be in that role where it doesn't necessarily fit. But, you know, to me, the bigger concerns that the Leafs have had with Nylander is just getting him playing at the level they want him as a winger, let alone as a center. And you know, the good news for him is there's been some improvement in that regard, even playing on this fourth line. You know, he had a three-point game in Edmonton last week. He had a point in Calgary before that, despite playing the lowest minutes of his NHL career. And I think that they're more kind of concerned about getting through him in his current position and then trying to load up his plate with something new.
How much longer do you think that this is going to go on, though? Like, if he played, I thought that road trip at the end of it was like, okay, it's done now. He's played really well. He led the team in points on the road trip. He played excellent. The final two periods of that game against Vancouver, he and Matthews absolutely dominated. In fact, just a couple of bad bounces and Leafs should have probably won that game. They killed Vancouver. And I was thinking, okay, this is the end of it. And then you see him up the middle. It's like, okay, that's there because of Bozak. But then when he was dumped down back to the fourth line, and I know that he's had success there, but to me that's just more of a reason to bump him back up than it is to keep him there at that point.
Well, look, I mean, there's some mind games at play here. I mean, the Leafs haven't had too many problems this year. I mean, they've been winning a lot of games despite, you know, some tough stretches of scoring for Nylander, for Mitch Marner as well. And, you know, I don't think that Mike Babcock minds, you know, giving him a little challenge here. And I'm sure he wasn't particularly happy when he came to the rink today to see his name back with the fourth line, just because, you know, like any player wants to play with line mates that are going to, you know, allow him to show his offensive creativity. He wants to play more minutes than he would if he was up the lineup versus as a fourth liner. But, you know, this is yet another kind of small hurdle being placed in his way. And, you know, I don't think, certainly no longer than this season, will we probably ever see him a fourth liner in the NHL again until maybe he's at the end of his career. But, you know, in this one year where the Leafs really believe they have 10 top nine forwards, someone has to be in that 10th spot. And, you know, this has been his time there. I agree with you that he showed a lot. And it's not just the points. I think the way he's played has been very positive, you know, probably the last five or so games. But, you know, he's still got to knock that door down or or wait for someone to get injured before, you know, his time is up. And then we'll probably be focused on Connor Brown or Mitch Marner or whoever else finds himself down that spot.
So we've been talking a lot about, and you reported that it could end up saving this team a little bit of money if Nylander doesn't get right or if the numbers don't continue to show. But at this point, if the cap could go up $5 million, is there any way that Austin Matthews doesn't have a bigger contract than Connor McDavid this offseason?
There's a way. I mean, a lot of it will depend on where he ends up. And, you know, he's off to a great start. But, you know, there's a difference at his level of player between 70 points, which would be a great year, and 90 points, which would, you know, put him in the top handful of guys in the scoring race. And, you know, to me, that will be a big determining factor. Also, you know, what kind of success and how he plays in the playoffs, you know, will probably strengthen his case or maybe weaken it slightly when it comes time to negotiate that next deal. But, you know, an important thing to note that all the top players are now doing is, you know, they don't want to point to just, you know, what other similar players in terms of ability have made. They talk about the number in terms of the percentage of the salary cap, which is part of how Connor McDavid got the number he did with Edmonton last year in terms of what Sidney Crosby's percentage was when he signed his second deal. And if the cap goes up, I mean, obviously the percentage that Austin Matthews will be arguing for will be a higher number. So, you know, I think at this point it's fair to say that he could come in anywhere from 11 to 13 million on his next deal, depending on the length. He's going to not have to worry about his kids or his kids' kids once he signs that deal. But there's still some jockeying to be had based on, you know, how successful his second half is. And you know, his health will play a part, too. I mean, he's missed games in November with the upper body injury. He's kind of shown at times you wonder if maybe he's still dealing with the effects of that. I mean, the interesting thing about an entry-level deal is a span of 10 games affects, you know, where you are in terms of point per game in your career because you haven't played enough games that's baked in stone yet. So, you know, we've seen other players have great second seasons and not so great third seasons, and that's hurt them. You know, I think Matthews certainly is going to be the highest player on the team on his next deal, but, you know, it's a little too soon to I think, like, hem in on which number he's going to end up at just because we'll see if he finishes high in the scoring race or maybe stumbles a little in the second half.
You certainly don't want him on a bridge deal. So you want him to do well, pay him. You don't want that on a bridge deal.
Well, exactly. And I don't think the Leafs view any of these players, you know, negatively. You know, even a Nylander or a Marner, they're going to end up with good second contracts. And I don't think the Leafs are secretly hoping they have bad seasons to try to bring those numbers down. I mean, you want to pay your stars. You want them to play like stars. And, you know, in a lot of ways, I think, especially on the second deal, the player really dictates it. And it can be as simple as where those numbers end up after two or three seasons, depending on when you're doing that deal and how they line up with previous contracts. And, you know, there isn't a ton of wiggle room generally when you're talking about the absolute best. And the Leafs have certainly one guy in Matthews who fits that category, and I think two others who aren't that far behind.
I know it's early to talk playoffs, but in watching, you know, the first third of the season, You watch Winnipeg, you watch Toronto, and I think we're like, all right, they're legit playoff teams. Then you look at the rest of the Canadian teams, you're like, okay, I could make a case for Calgary, Ottawa.
Almost all,
right? And
yeah,
at the end of the day, but I could also make a case that Winnipeg and Toronto might be the only two.
It's a scary thought. I hope none of the bosses are near you right now as you're saying that. But, you know,
I don't worry about any of that.
but you know, it is true. You look at how Ottawa struggled here, losing 8 of 9 to fall back. I mean, Montreal surged with Carey Price healthy, and, you know, you have to think that he holds the key to whether they are able to stick in that third spot in the Atlantic Division and claim a playoff spot. You know, Calgary, to me, should be a playoff team. And I know that they've dipped just out here in the last little stretch. But, you know, when you look up and down their lineup, there's not a ton of holes. They feel actually as though they've underperformed a little bit with what they have, and certainly their blue line. I think they were expecting better things after making the big deal to get Travis Hamonic, and you know, don't feel as though they've kind of found their stride as a six-man unit. But, you know, with that blue line and with Mike Smith playing pretty well as he has to start this year, and then to have two, you know, really high-end top six group of forwards, you know, that should be enough to drag them in. You know, Edmonton might have dug too big a hole at this stage, and Vancouver is a tough one. I mean, they're surprised to even be where they are right now for me. And you know, I won't say they can't do it, but, you know, I don't expect them to linger in the race. But, you know, if we're going to do a power rankings after, you know, giving the Leafs in Winnipeg a spot, I would say to me, Calgary's probably the most likely team beyond them to make it, with Montreal probably fourth, just because they look like a different group since Carey Price has come back.
Yeah, I feel the same. I still don't want to count out Ottawa. I feel like they are, yeah, just right there with Montreal, that the two teams.
I have Ottawa ahead of Montreal, but I'm the same way. I have Calgary but right there, and I have Ottawa taking over Montreal.
I know. I just look at that Ottawa team right now and the way that they're going since they came back from Sweden. It's really hard to project them and say, oh, okay, they're going to like, you can't stay this
Matt
poor.
Matt Duchene at some point will put up points.
Yeah,
I mean,
I just don't. I can't imagine now is the time that I can do it and make that projection or feel confident about doing it. Hey, another team that we've been talking about the last couple of days, and it was sparked a lot by, again, you guys on headlines this past week, was the Sabres and how it looks like it's going to be another teardown, that everybody's available except for Eichel, essentially. And the guy that's really interesting is, again, Evander Kane, because he's probably one of the only guys on that Sabre team that is overperforming. And yet, we have struggled with wondering how much a team might be willing to give for a player that is clearly having that type of success on the ice, but that there is a reputation there, and that if you're a general manager and he comes in and your team goes south a little bit, or that it doesn't work out for you, that it feels like still a much riskier move. So maybe the Sabres wouldn't be able to get back, say, like the first round pick that they might be looking for.
Well, there's risk in any of those moves when you're bringing in a short-term fix in terms of hoping to propel your team forward. But, you know, with Evander Kane, I don't think they're going to have any trouble getting a haul for him. I mean, he's the best player in my eyes that's likely to move before the end of the year. Maybe Oliver Ekman-Larsson is a bit more of a dark horse. But, you know, Evander Kane, everybody knows around the league what he can do. I mean, he scores at the best of them when he's at his best. He still skates at a very high level. And I just don't think anyone as motivated as he's going to be, because it is still a contract year for him, and as talented as he is and can, you know, play and augment a second or third line, you know, with the way teams are trying to balance scoring throughout their lineup, you know, the rest of the year, I think he'll end up on a good team, you know, somewhere on or before the trade deadline in February. And, you know, it makes sense for Buffalo. I mean, they're at a point where it is kind of a rebuild. I don't know what we call it at this stage, but they're not the ones signing him to a big money long-term extension at this point. It makes sense for them to get more futures and to bring prospects and picks into the organization. And, you know, I do know a number of teams have already been kicking the tires on Evander Kane. And one thing that works in his favor is his last contract year. He had a monster season. I believe it was his best year statistically, other than the one he might be offering right now. And they just feel that if you have him in a certain window where, you know, he stands to gain by having a big season, that, you know, he can help your team. So I understand some of those concerns, because he's found himself in the newspapers a couple times for the wrong reasons, but, you know, it hasn't happened to my knowledge in the last year or so. And you know, what he's showing on the ice shows you why a team with eyes on the Stanley Cup could use him in their lineup.
Anyone looking at their goaltending position, maybe as a backup, some, you know, insurance as they go through, or anyone from the back end?
Well, it sounds like Florida is at least thinking about that now that Roberto Luongo is out for an extended period of time here. And you know, they did bring in Antti Niemi on waivers when he was injured earlier this season. You know, this looks like it could be anywhere from 2 to 6 weeks, depending on, you know, how his injury heals. And you know, I believe that they'll be looking around. You know, I believe Edmonton is at least, you know, surveying the market with Cam Talbot out. And, you know, there's a couple teams, including the one that plays here in the city, that have NHL quality backups anyway playing on their American Hockey League team. And, you know, I'm not sure if there's a fit specific, you know, to either Calvin Pickard or Garrett Sparks with one of those organizations, or if Toronto, you know, would be willing to do that at this point. But, you know, it does sound as though, you know, the goalie market could see some movement here in the next little bit, just because of injuries. And we all know how important the points are every game, even at this stage of the season, a third of the way through the year. You know, those teams that are trying to stay in the race don't want to, you know, let one injury submarine their season.
Hey, CJ, thanks again for doing this, man. We'll be watching tonight.
Okay, boys. Thank you.
Cheers, pal. Peter Labardius is on the line. We're excited to talk to him. He's the Calgary Flames radio analyst on Sportsnet 960. Hey, Lubo, how you doing, man?
I'm good. How are you?
Doing okay. We're getting by. Get excited for this game tonight. I mean, it was probably one of the Leafs' more complete games of the season, and I feel like it's been two teams that have been treading in the opposite directions as of late. What's going on with the Flames? They've dropped 5 of their last 7.
Well, the Flames' number one problem right now is they've been turning too many pucks over, and they've been making too many unforced errors, and which has led to a lack of consistency. I think right now their biggest focus has just been the fact that, you know, they built what should be a really excellent group of defensemen, but it doesn't seem like their top four has had very many nights where all four guys are good. So that's been part of the problem. The biggest problem right now, in fact, in a stretch where they've only won twice in their last seven, earlier in the year, a matter of fact, up until the last couple of weeks, they were not receiving a lot of production out of their bottom six. That seems to have turned around, especially the third line with the likes of Mark Jankowski and Sam Bennett, who was in an absolute funk the majority of the year, but now he comes into tonight riding a four-game point streak. So they've been really, really good when they've been good, and they've struggled at other times. Mike Smith has been outstanding outside of the last two games where he's looked human. He's been as good as anybody. So just hasn't been very many times, guys, where everybody has been going all at once.
A good start has to be the focus for them, as well as Leafs have struggled getting out of the gates, but this thing is almost like a perfect storm, even though it is an away game, a perfect storm for a Flames team coming in here.
Well, the Flames, Matthew, have struggled to get leads after the first period. A matter of fact, they've only had the lead three times so far this year after the first. Now, when they lead after the second period, it's almost a closed book. They're 42-0-1 in the last 2 years when they lead after the second period. It was funny today because Mike Babcock's number one thing going into tonight was, as you hear him say many a day, start on time. They're back to skating in the mornings of game time. Why? Start on time. The one struggle the Flames have had a lot this year is they've kind of, instead of diving into the pool, they've kind of dipped their toes into the pool, and they've chased some games, especially early. So both teams will be really focused. JD, I thought you hit it right on the head. Needless to say, I haven't watched the Leafs as closely as you have, but they were dynamite. I thought in Calgary they limited the Flames to only 20 shots. These are different times in Calgary right now. High expectations. People excited about this group. They know their personnel is good. They're coming off a playoff year, but it's an uneasy group. It's completely uneasy around the team, and they have been challenged as a group after certainly a few subpar efforts. This is a very important night and an important couple of nights for a Flames team that has been way better this season on the road than they've been at home.
Yeah, and you know what? I thought the Flames heading into the season, a lot of people made the case that they were going to be the best Canadian team, and I think that they still have the roster on paper to do that. But probably the biggest reason for that was the defense corps, and they went out and grabbed Travis Hamonic to the chagrin of many Leaf fans, because it's like, here's a right-shot defenseman. There's not too many of them. The Flames end up outbidding Toronto, and everyone's a little upset about it. But so far, it's been a pretty disappointing go for him. He's only got 3 points in 24 games. You mentioned the inconsistencies on the back end for Calgary. Has he been probably maybe the biggest problem for Calgary this year? And if so, what's going on with him?
No, I wouldn't say he has. As a matter of fact, right now, I would suggest that his partner, TJ Brody, has had the toughest time in recent days. It's like I said earlier, I wouldn't blame it on any one person on that defense. Yes, maybe he's looked at a lot, especially from afar. For Travis, I never, JD, look at his point production. He's never been a huge point producer. He's been a hard to play against, competitive, has defended a lot of teams' number one lines over the years with the Islanders. As of yet, he just hasn't found great synergy with TJ Brody, who, for whatever reason, is just going through a really tough time. I don't think Dougie Hamilton has been at his best so far this year. The most consistent Flame defender on the top four has been Mark Giordano. And it really comes down to what I said earlier. Outside of two or three games, there just doesn't seem to have been too many nights where you go all four of those top four guys have been as good. But, you know, it's still relatively early. And the other thing that kind of affected the second pairing was Travis was really starting to play well. Those guys were finding some synergy as a group, and then Travis went down for three games with a lower body injury, and then it took a little while to come back. He did in Detroit. They, as a team, had a rough night, and That's kind of been the story. And as Matthew knows better than anybody, guess what? It takes more than the defense to defend well as a group, too. You know, in this league, you defend well in groups of five. So, yes, there's been a lot of focus there, but those guys on the back end aren't alone when it's come to some bad decisions or defending not the way they'd like to, because their goaltending, believe me, has saved them in a lot of games.
I was going to say, there's been some fluky, wacky goals going on that team lately.
Yeah, that hasn't helped either. You know, it's not, you're right, Matthew, it's not an excuse, but, you know, even look at the Leaf game. You know, it's a pretty good first period. Everything's going okay. Roman Polak shoots a puck to the end boards about 15 feet wide of the net, or at least it tended that way, goes off Hamonic's shin pad, and where does it end up? In the back of the net. You know, in a game against Edmonton where they were awful until the third period, they draw to within 6-5, and then on a 2-on-1 late, PJ Brody has another puck go off his stick. That night I referred to in Detroit, they had three rotten bounces, including the first goal when TJ went back on a 2-on-1 and tried to helicopter his way to break up a 2-on-1 off his stick through Mike Smith's leg. So they're fighting it. When you're fighting it, those things seem to find you.
Yeah.
Rule of thumb, if Roman Polak scores, you lose.
I was going to say that that was probably the nicest goal of his career. It's a nice one for Polak.
Whoa, wow.
Lucky guy, that's a
tad
hard. Probably kept him in the lineup for a couple of extra games. Lucky guy. Hey, look at the stat sheet. Hey, Peter, thanks again for doing this, buddy. Always great chatting with you.
Yeah, you guys too.
Cheers, thanks, pal.